Hey Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. For anyone joining us, Matt Higgins is Vice Chairman of the Miami Dolphins and CEO of RSE Ventures. RSE is a private investment firm investing in companies across the sports and entertainment landscape, consumer, media, and technology. Matt also has a portfolio of dynamic restaurants and brands, including partnerships with David Chang's Momofuku, Christina Tosi's Milk Bar, Ann Pizza, and Bluestone Lane. Matt is an executive fellow at Harvard Business School, where I had the pleasure to take one of his courses, and I'm thrilled to have him here to share his thoughts. Matt, thanks so much for joining me. You just penned an open letter on LinkedIn, which is effectively, a letter from a founder to their investors right now. Just share with people what the key takeaways are and what some of those messages are that you think founders should be sharing with their investors at a time like
Yeah,
this.
I think obviously it's a tough time for everybody, investors included, and you're watching your portfolio plummet instantly. But the purpose of the letter was to take a step back and say, what's everybody's role in a crisis, right? Because in a crisis, your role changes almost overnight, and some people are probably more at ease in that situation than others. And so I've watched this fact pattern play out: some investors shining and adapting, and some holding on to a degree of rigidity that's actually not helpful. So I just wanted to put forth a degree of empathy for investors, but also like, how do you behave in the most effective manner possible? And a few takeaways for me were, number one, every conversation with your founder should start, how can I help you? Right? I mean, your founder is an operator by definition. They're on the front line, and they can only see so far as the hand in front of their face in a fog of war. And so, how can I help you? And then the second point is relieve them from functions that require more lead time. So what do I mean by that? Unemployment benefits and government aid and a lot of the more complicated issues that if you were dealing with how to protect your employees and making some difficult choices on staffing, you wouldn't necessarily be able to get to effectively. As an investor, you probably have a portfolio of 5, 10, 20 companies. You probably have done a lot of this research. So it sounds obvious, but try to take responsibility for the long lead time items. And another piece of advice I had is just be a human first and an investor last. Have a degree of understanding when a founder wants to hold on to the principles that their company was built upon and trust that they're going to make the right choices. And then lastly, it's about survival. It's not about the bottom line right now. It's about extending runway. So don't call up and ask for an updated model because the 1918 flu epidemic isn't exactly a great comp right now. So to the extent to which you need data, the data should be about helping a founder make great decisions together, not about assessing, let me get back to profitability today. So those are my easier said than done, but I just let me
No,
put it out
absolutely.
there,
Yeah, those are super helpful and very tactical, I think. And a lot of investors, I'm sure, are going through a lot of those thoughts themselves. You talked a little bit about this sort of survival tactic. You've spent a lot of time in the consumer world. Obviously, consumer businesses are getting hit especially hard right now. Most of them are seeing revenue decline 50, 75, 100%. What are you thinking? Are the important things for founders and consumer businesses especially to think about right now? And where do you sort of see the consumer landscape shifting in the next couple months?
Well, this is a topic we covered in our DTC class with Len Schlesinger at HBS, just about how in particular, the DTC landscape has evolved significantly in the last 10 years. But one of the key takeaways too is just how important it is to build community and authenticity, right? And that the winners who will win long term, the Everlanes and the Boll and Branches, right, who are built on mission-driven companies, a mission-driven thesis, those are the ones I think that are best able to endure this crisis because they're going to live their marketing. And by living their marketing, when the entire world is paying attention, you have an opportunity to win over a whole new office, so a new audience. So my advice, particularly in the consumer space, is one, live your marketing, and two, the future belongs to the content creators. Get out there and communicate and be empathetic to your customers' needs and recognize that if you build that affinity and loyalty now, when we come out the other side, you're going to be rewarded for it. So I don't advise launching right now. I don't advise being hyper transactional. If you could defer launching, use that energy that you were going to put towards your launch toward building a community and being empathetic toward your ultimate customer.
Yeah, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about something that's popped up in a few of my podcasts just on the consumer side, this notion of pre-selling products. So whether that's restaurants where I know you've spent time or an e-commerce platform, you know, giving someone, you know, $75 worth of something that, and charging them $50 today, knowing that you sort of need the cash and the working capital for the business to maybe make it out of this. What are your thoughts on, you know, in innovative little things like that, and whether or not we'll continue to see that after
I
COVID-19?
love the idea intellectually. I think it's very clever, and but my instinct is that it more scratches the itch to do something, right? I think one of the I lived through 9/11. I was the mayor's press secretary on 9/11, and then I was COO of the agency in charge of the rebuilding of the World Trade Center. So I spent 2 years down there, and I'm saying that because the difference between this crisis and 9/11 is it was very clear what we all needed to do to help each other. We all needed to support the recovery workers. We all needed to get out of our houses and take in a Broadway play and shop and spend money to prop up the economy. The tough part about here is there's so much confusion and haze around what any of us individually can do to lean in. And so even on those on the front line, which are hospital workers, it's not entirely clear how do you support them other than at 7 p.m. Everyone leaning out, which is beautiful and poignant, but we don't have a lot of action steps to take. So what I like about those programs of putting forth revenue at the time when you need it, it gives everybody something that we can kind of do. Do I believe it's going to make a meaningful impact? Probably not. That's just my prediction.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I had Brad Tuig from Lightspeed on a couple of days ago, and you both now have mentioned that sort of notion of fog of war and our inability to really see too far into the future. I want to shift a little bit to your experience in the restaurant industry in particular. David Chang, obviously a very well-known chef and restaurateur from Momofuku, put out a fairly dark piece on kind of where he sees the restaurant industry ending up and landing after all this. I'm curious your take on the restaurant industry in particular and the impact of COVID-19, maybe beyond just, you know, 2, 3 weeks
Well,
from
I
now.
love David for many reasons, but one of the reasons is that he's the only person that might be more paranoid than I am. So we have conversations where we predict, gloom and doom. I might be less gloom, but he knows more than I do. So I would probably listen to him more. I think if you look at the experience in China and elsewhere, it's not like we suddenly flip a switch and suddenly everyone comes rushing back in. I think it's a much longer recovery than people are predicting. And I think it's going to take a lot more time. I mean, one of the things that I've seen throughout the prognostication on CNBC and whatnot is this notion of everyone trying to call the bottom. This happens in every crisis and every correction. And historically, there's been five mini rallies and false bottoms along the way. So I think we're very early. We haven't even felt the compounding effect of massive layoffs unrelated to the sudden shock, right? The kind of what I call the percussion waves that are come after the initial blast. And so on the restaurant side, back to David, I think in the short term, it's going to be a lot of pain. I do want to praise the federal government because I think the program to some level actually was pretty responsive, basically giving 2.5 times your average monthly payroll as a low interest loan of about 0.5%. That is going to help. But I think we're in for a much longer slog than people are predicting. So my overall advice is don't plan for 3 months, plan for 2 years of pain, because if you end up being wrong, well, you're better off for it.
It's really interesting. I want to spend a little bit of time just on leadership principles and you know some of the things you've seen just being around such great leaders, whether that's in the sports world or restaurants or tech. You know, what do you think a good leader is saying to his or her team during a time like this, and how do you sort of maintain and build culture through this type of uncertainty?
Well, something I always say, now I'm quoting myself, which is therefore becoming cliche, that only helicopters hover, right? People are either ascending or descending. You can't hover. And so right now we're all playing defense. Defense is very withering. You can only hold back. I mean, I can now mix in football metaphors too, but you know what I'm saying, right? You can only apply so much kinetic energy for so long to try to hold back a force before you eventually are worn down and relent. And so your team needs some way to play offense. We all do. Call it hope, call it aggression. Like you need an outlet. And so my advice to founders has been, obviously most of our energy has to be dedicated toward just surviving and playing defense, but we need to carve out a way to play offense to give people hope. So that could mean pivoting to doing DTC when you've never done it before. Or in the case of Bluestone Lane, we shut down all but 14 of our cafes. We have two people working 8-hour shifts, and now we're doing curbside pickup when we had never done that before. We had only launched order ahead a couple months ago, and we had certainly done no meaningful delivery. Same thing in our pizza business at M Pizza. Our whole business has been built on walk the line. Well, now that's evaporated, and now we need to compete on delivery. So I would argue every CEO should audit themselves and say, how do I give my team some element of offense to work on so that we're not playing defense all day and creating a crisis atmosphere? The second question I keep saying to our founders, and even to myself, that I find a lot of folks are asking themselves the wrong question. Their reflexive question is, how do I rebuild my business? And I don't think that's the right question. The question should be, if I were starting my business today, what business would I build? And when you ask yourself that question, your energy suddenly shifts from holding on to letting go. Like, there are all decisions that all of us should make, would make, if only we had more time and weren't playing defense, you know, and every day we run our businesses. Well, the entire world hit pause. So it does create an opportunity to reevaluate your personal and professional choices. And through that can come a lot of growth. So I keep saying to all my, if we were building this business today, what business we could build. And the reception I keep getting is like almost like relief, like a sigh, like it's like we're giving ourselves permission to look at the world anew. And that's something that's very personal. I'm doing it to myself too. I'm like, why am I constantly overweight? Like, how do I, like, if I'm at least going to be in a controlled environment where I've lost all my excuses, like, what does that really mean? And it turns out that the reason I actually am overweight is because I eat too much. I have no personal discipline, and I don't work out consistently, you know, magically, it turns out. So now that I'm in this environment, I'm trying to tackle that. So I'm hard on myself, but you know, but I do it lovingly. So
I love it. Two more for you. Thank you. This has been super helpful. I'd love to just get your take on the venture industry. And sort of where we end up from a fundraising and investing perspective going forward. You know, a lot's talked about the pendulum between founder friendly and investor friendly. You know, where do you think terms are in 3-6 months from now? And how does that landscape look from a deployment of capital perspective?
My first advice to any founder who can is to, if you had a choice between trying to take equity right now or wait, do everything you can to slow your burn and live to fight another day, because it's just human nature. Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of understandable. Every deal got repriced post COVID. And I don't need data to know that. I don't need conversations with other VCs to know that. It's just the way, it's just human nature. So that I wouldn't want my round to be priced in this environment. I would want to try to buy time. And for certainly us to have more clarity about when we hit the peak. I mean, I'd be looking for certain data points about when I might seek funding. I want to see the peaks being reached in certainly major metropolitan areas. I want to see more clarity from the federal government as what's the long-term way out of that. So for example, is widespread testing based on what Abbott just launched with the 5-minute test that could be deployed anywhere? I want to see more unanimity develop. And I also, three, want to start seeing the knock-on effects of the initial crisis play out a bit. We know there's going to be a massive correction in the housing market. We know what that does, you know, to consumer confidence. So what's my point? If you could buy time, buy time. If you can't buy time, there's always a market for the winners. It's just the filter that's going to be applied to you is just, you know, you could look at the article that I posted with Len Schlesinger and HBS on the DTC side, where we talked about what will we need to see from the next wave of DTCs in order to get funded. But my guess, my overall advice, which is sort of obvious, is wait if you can.
Yeah, no, and that's a great article. I'll shout out Shay Roseman, who's a classmate of mine, on helping get that together as well, which very proud of her. Last one for you, if we spend a little bit of time looking at silver linings, looking at sort of the optimistic future of where we end up after this, you know, anything in particular that you see, whether it's cultural or consumer behavior, things that might be a positive.
Yeah, there's always positives. I think one huge one, it's been covered and noted, but is telemedicine. It's important to me because I grew up in Queens, very, very poor, and my mother always had chronic ailments, and we didn't have health insurance. We didn't have, you know, anything. So I spent a lot of my early years sitting outside of an ER while my mother was inside trying to get a doctor to look at her. And it's just so incredibly inefficient. And, you know, it was such a high bar for us to get care. And it was always, we were on the brink of disaster. And telemedicine enables, you know, a doctor to have a conversation and really do a lot. So the medical industry has been lagging and embracing it. And I think one of the massive changes coming out of this is people are going to be way better served in rural communities, and a lot of the inefficiency is going to be taken out of the medical marketplace, which I think is a huge advantage.
Yeah, that's great. Matt Higgins, CEO of RC Ventures, thank you so much
All
for
right.
being here, man. I really
Stay
appreciate it
safe,
because this
stay
was super
isolated,
insightful.
and I'm always here if you need somebody to talk to. Thank you.
I
Take care.
appreciate it, man. Take care.